Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Goals on Film, Edge of the Crowd's dedicated sports movies podcast. I'm your host, Jason, and I've got Danny joining me today. How are you doing? You make your return to Goals on Film.
I'm back, better than ever, I hope. How you going?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. This is the first time that you've been on since Cars, our Cars episode.
It's been a hot minute, and it seems that I have something about racing by the sounds of it, by the looks of it, by the list of the films that I have jumped on here for. I won't spoil it until you announce it, but yes, it seems I have a thing for these types of films.
There seems to be an emerging trend with the episodes that you're appearing on. And I will just say, if you haven't listened to Cars with me, Danny and Beck, go back and listen to that one. It was a great episode. But we will get into this episode now. And before I fully get into it, I will preface that, Danny, you and I are against horse racing. And so we don't agree with its practices nor the atmosphere around it at various times, but especially around this time of year as well, because it was the Melbourne Cup that was held earlier this week. And so usually when we're doing a certain film to get into the spirit of a particular sporting event, but this week I'm just going to say that we're choosing to take the connection of the event, which was the Spring Racing Carnival, and we're going to take it a bit differently this week. And instead of a horse racing film, we're going to be taking a look at a family-friendly flick, 2005 comedy Racing Stripes, which is a zebra racing film. I don't know. Is it a bit of both? I guess we'll discuss that. But yeah, Danny, what do you think?
Mate, I am thrilled. Ever since the whole concept of this podcast came up, I was like, as soon as you do Racing Stripes, I'm on. It is one of my favorite movies ever. And I tell you what, I had so much fun going back and revisiting this movie. Not that I needed the refresher, but yeah, very excited that we've got this one lined up. Like you say, family-friendly movie. It is aimed at that family genre. I don't know how deep we want to get, but, you know, we just prefaced we're not huge fans of horse racing, and then we say it's family-friendly when horse racing isn't that family-friendly, but I digress. But yeah, keen to get stuck into this film and what we think of it.
All right. Well, I'll just give you a synopsis of the film. Racing Stripes tells the story of Stripes, a circus plain zebra who is accidentally abandoned in Kentucky and raised by Channing and Nolan Walsh on a farm which is located next to a racing track. Believing that he is a racehorse, Stripes dreams of training for and competing in races none bigger than the Kentucky Open. After Channing's father, a former horse trainer who lost his wife to an accident where she fell on her horse and died, he agrees to let his daughter train for the event and race Stripes with his team of human and animal friends, all against the odds, both from humans and animals alike as well, enter into the race. In the race, Stripes stays with the pack until he can't keep up any longer, but with an extra determination, he finishes strongly to win the Kentucky Open. And so, Danny, with all that information and having watched the film recently too, and I know that you've watched it previously as well, as you sort of evidenced earlier, you know, you said this is a film that you've advocated for quite some time. And, you know, do you want to go a bit deeper into why you like the film and why it's a favourite of yours?
Yeah, sure. I am a sucker for kids' films. We'll just put that out there to start with, as was obvious when I did the Cars episode. But yeah, to me, it was, it comes across as a bit lighthearted, except it's a bit scary in some moments. But something that really stood out for me was the way that it introduced the idea of acceptance and equality to a young audience. There's a quote that Tucker, who is a miniature pony, says to Stripes, when Stripes gets a bit down on himself for being different. Tucker says, "You're just different, and for some horses, different is scary."
"I don't understand. Why won't he let them play with me?"
"You're just different. And for some horses, different is scary."
And that for me really stood out. I was a kid that didn't fit in at the time. So that's probably a link as to why I liked this movie so much. But yeah, I think the idea of enforcing that, you know, there are people who are different, everyone is different, and some people just don't like that, was really important to me. I held that idea close to me because, like I said, I was different. So, yeah, I think that was a really clever way of introducing that idea to kids in particular. How about yourself? What did you like about this movie?
Yeah, I thought that, you know, it obviously started off really sad, and, you know, with Stripes being abandoned, and then like it sort of like picked up from there, like with all the bullying that he was experiencing from sort of just the people and the animals themselves. And, you know, like I think that I sort of like similarly to you, like sort of really connected with that in a way of sort of like seeing, you know, this animal that is sort of like down and, you know, against all the odds, like, you know, sort of recovers from that and sort of dreams of doing what they want to do and that. And so I think that, yeah, the overall themes are sort of like really important to my watching experience of this movie as well. And I have no doubt like that was the same when I watched this as a kid as well. And so I think that, you know, the overall storyline was really good. You know, it was uplifting in parts. I think that, you know, seeing that progression of the story and seeing the progression of Stripes, you know, from being left alone to growing up with this family to winning the race, I think that, you know, that progression of himself and like the story itself, I think was so sort of like super important in terms of, you know, just showing that to sort of like kids as well. And I think that, you know, towards the end, like, you know, you definitely, because you've sort of like rode that, you know, journey with Stripes and the family, you know, it does sort of like bring a tear to your eye sometimes at the end when, you know, he is, you know, pushing towards that last leg of the finish line and ultimately winning the race and everything. And then, you know, just how much he sort of interacts with all of his friends in terms of the animals, the other barnyard animals and a pelican, which I think we'll get to soon because that was just crazy. But I think that, you know, just like this group of like, you know, seemingly sort of like misfits or people that like, I think don't really, you know, you wouldn't expect to belong together in one place. I think that was really sort of important to show as well, as opposed to someone who doesn't fit in, but, you know, seemingly others who like don't fit in at the same time, like all banding together for this one common goal.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the idea of you make your own family kind of thing really stood out there in amongst the animals. But also something like you talk about progression, and we really see a whole lot of character development with both Channing and Nolan. Nolan, well, first of all, having a quote unquote unconventional family on a movie screen in 2005, you know, a single dad raising a daughter, that was pretty cool. But you see, Nolan overcome his fear and, you know, realize that his little girl's growing up. And then you have Channing who, you know, learns to stand up for herself and back herself. To have young girls watch that and realize that they can, one, follow their dreams in a male-dominated sport, and two, learn to back themselves and follow their dreams. There's just so many bigger ideas at play in this movie. So, yeah, no wonder I turned out to be such an activist when I loved this movie.
Yeah, no, it definitely leaves a lasting impact on, I think, anyone who watches it. So, yeah, no, I think that in that sense, you know, like we've spoken about reliving it from our childhood, and it's nice to see that we can still connect with it even now.
Definitely.
All right, we'll move on now and we will look at references to history. And now, Danny, I'm not sure if there has been any zebra racing at all throughout history, but there were a couple of things in this movie that are sort of like spoofs of or like allusions to real life events or places. And so I will just run you through a couple of them. And so the main event in this movie is called the Kentucky Open. This is a bit of a spoof of a real horse race called the Kentucky Derby. It's held annually in Louisville, Kentucky. And yeah, like it's also known as the most exciting 2 minutes in sports because of its duration. And I guess like, you know, similarly to that, I guess like, you know, looking back at the Melbourne Cup, like the race that stops a nation. So like, I think that, you know, you sort of do get these ties to the duration of the race, or even just like the race and sort of like how it is sort of held, you know, by higher ups who get into it. But yeah, the Derby is also frequently referred to as the Run for the Roses, because a lush blanket of 554 red roses is awarded to the Kentucky Derby winner each year. The tradition originated in 1883. Yeah, and the gesture in 1896, it was sort of, was the first recorded account of draping roses on the Derby winner. And it's usually done by the governor of Kentucky, who presents the, you know, trophy and all that to the winner. And so I think that we got that connection at the end of the movie as well, where Stripes was, you know, having that blanket of roses across his neck as well. And so I think that it's cool that they could sort of like, you know, go back to and reference this particular event as well.
Come on, get back up there. You should be in the winner's circle.
We both should be. I'd be nothing without you.
Thanks, kid.
You know, the roses make you look like Elvis. Very Elvis, very Elvis 75.
Yeah, definitely. That's a really special moment in the film. When he gets his blanket, and what follows that, we won't give away too many spoilers. But another reference to Kentucky comes pretty early on in the movie with our good friend Reggie the Rooster, when he yells, probably my favorite line of the movie, "Well, subdivide me and Kentucky fry me."
I swear, Franny, the funnier you look at the animal, the more you want to keep it.
Kept you, didn't I?
Uh-huh. "Well, subdivide me and Kentucky fry me. You know what, Tucker? You cut those bangs, you and him could be cousins." Just thinking out loud. Thinking out loud.
Just every time I genuinely lose it. And I didn't realize until I went back and watched this movie that I definitely say this in real life and had not realized where it had come from. Like, I'll say it sometimes and just be like, I don't know where I have heard this before, but it's obviously, again, shows how much of a role this movie played in my life. I like the accent, by the way. I'm terrible at accents, but I have learned Reggie's off by heart.
Yeah, I think Reggie was one of my favorite characters just because of his sort of like one-liners that he said, mostly like, yeah, when he was waking people up in the morning.
"Good morning, Walsh Farm. Well, I know it's not glamorous, but it's a living. Keeps my head on my shoulders, which is more than I can say for some of my cousins."
Yeah. Acid rain, acid rain. Oh dear, what a guy.
Oh, I love him. The next reference to history is Turfway Park. And so this was the fictional venue where the races were being held. And fun fact, Turfway Park, the backdrop for it was actually at Hollywood Bet's Scottsville Racecourse in South Africa and Riverholm Country Estate, also in South Africa. So it wasn't even in Kentucky or even the US that this movie was filming at to convey Turfway Park. But Turfway Park is actually a real racetrack as well. It is in Kentucky. And so I think that, you know, this was a sort of like, you know, reference to the real life racetrack. And from what I could see in terms of like the signage and stuff at the real Turfway Park, in terms of, you know, the sign that said Turfway Park in the movie, like it seemed really similar to the real life one as well. So again, just a connection to Kentucky, a connection to real life of places in horse racing.
That's cool. I can't say I've ever been to Kentucky, so I can't confirm or deny what you've just said, but I'll believe you.
All right. In terms of references to history, but in terms of references to pop culture, Danny, you have a couple of instances where, you know, some movies, some films, anything else was referenced in this movie.
Yeah, there are so many pop culture references littered through this movie. One of the first ones that we come across is there is a bunch of trophies that are unveiled from previous horses that Nolan has trained. And just the way that it's unveiled reminds me of the movie Cars. But I will point out that Cars came out after Racing Stripes. So that's just a little something that I came across. One of the ones that stood out to me, which not heaps of people might pick up on, but I definitely did when this movie first came out, was there's a quote that says, "Be careful, Pony Boy."
"I've taken out pucks bigger than you."
"Yeah? What'd you do, talk him to death?"
"Hey, be careful, Pony Boy, or someday somebody's going to wake up with your head in their bed."
"I should have guessed from the size of that pecker you'd be a big mouth."
"Watch it, Stumpy. I'd cut you off at the knees, but it looks like somebody's beat me to it."
And to me, that is referencing Pony Boy Curtis, who was a character in the film from 1967, I want to say. It's called The Outsiders, and the character is Pony Boy Curtis, like I just said. And it was pretty cool because I studied that book at school, I want to say the year that this movie came out. So that's why that's always stuck in my mind. We've got Goose the Pelican, which is a reference to the Top Gun films. And we also have, there's a scene where basically the main horse that Stripes is up against challenges him to this underground race. And, you know, it's at night and in a little hideaway spot.
"There's a place where we can settle this. No humans, no rules."
"Where and when?"
"Welcome to the Blue Moon Races. Tonight's first contestant is 10-0 and good to go. He is the baddest pony on the prairie. Give it up for Renton's Pride." "Step right up if you're horse enough."
"Not no way."
"Who's feeling their oats?"
"We can beat him."
"Oh, no way. He's too tough.
I'll take him on."
And there's all this smack talk beforehand, and everyone who's watching kind of gathers around at the start. And it reminded me of what a drag race scene in Fast and the Furious is like. So that was a cool little flash to that series. Later on, we've got Reggie. Our main man, Reggie, when they're building a racetrack at the farm, he says, "If you build it, they will come.
If you build it, they will come."
And that, my friends, is from Field of Dreams, which has starred on this podcast already. Definitely go back and listen to that episode. And then there's a bunch of songs that Buzz and Scuzz, the flies, sing along to during the movie.
"Ebony and ivory
live together in perfect harmony.
Side by side on my piano keyboard."
"Get off me, you stupid flies. Get off."
"Man, ebony and ivory didn't work. Oh, that's a first."
"I told you we should have rapped."
Buzz and Scuzz, played by Steve Harvey and David Spade, who I did not pick as the characters. You didn't pick Steve Harvey either, did you?
No. So, like, yeah, when I, I wouldn't have picked it at the time either. Like, you know, those people are sort of like beyond my knowing. But I think that, you know, watching it back this week, I think that I sort of did a bit of reference prior to watching the movie and found out who plays who and who voices who. And I think that from that, like, and seeing that it was Steve Harvey and seeing that it was David Spade, like I was able to watch the movie and sort of like, yeah, put the names to the voices. But even so, like I was able to see David Spade or hear David Spade's voice, but I would never have picked, even though I did read that it was Steve Harvey, I would never have picked that it was Steve Harvey's voice.
No, he sounds so young in this. But yeah, there's plenty of pop culture references littered through this movie. So yeah, definitely drop a comment if you can think of any others that happen throughout Racing Stripes.
Yeah, I think that, you know, only another one I have, just maybe adding on to this, is like there's a reference to Star Wars and like Luke Skywalker towards the end. I think yeah. It's when Scuzz is like relaying a message to Stripes in that final race, is like, you know, Luke Skywalker coming through or something like that.
"Superfly, we're proceeding to the target. Do you copy, Scuzz?"
"Hey, I told you to use my code name, Luke Skywalker."
So good. I've never seen Star Wars, but yes, I did pick up on that one.
Yeah. And the other one is Goose. Again, Goose coming through with the pop culture references, referencing Scarface when he says, "Say hello to my little friend."
Say hello to my little friend.
Of course, the main one. I can't believe I forgot that one. Yes, that is one of my highlights of the film.
All right, we'll move on now and we will talk about how well the film conveys the sport. Again, probably not of zebra racing, but horse racing maybe. And so I'll start this off by saying that when Channing is first racing Stripes after, you know, she finishes work one day, and then you've got like that, you know, sort of bookie guy who's in the stands and sort of like timing her out of the gate. Stripes runs a quarter mile in 23 seconds. And so I did a bit of research in terms of how fast a horse can run a quarter mile. And so I don't actually think Stripes' time was too out of, you know, the sort of realm of possibility in terms of how fast a horse could run. So, and like we'll get into like the similarities, I guess, between horses and zebras soon, I think, as well. But in terms of how fast a horse can run a quarter mile, the fastest quarter mile that's ever been run was 20.57 seconds. That was by a two-year-old thoroughbred filly named Winning Brew. She reached a speed of 43.97 miles, causing the Guinness World Records to list this feat as the fastest ever clocked on a racetrack.
Wow, that is fast. I could dream of going like a quarter of that.
Yes.
But yeah, even further on that, we've got the fastest that, or the average speed that a racehorse runs at is sort of that 64 to 70 kilometer an hour speed, and a plain zebra runs at 65 kilometers an hour. So the fact that the race is so close and those two top speeds are so close, again, pretty similar to real life.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that we've established from this and, like, from this movie, like, they got it right that zebras are pretty fast. And, you know, we talked about the speeds that they can reach. And I think that, you know, zebras sort of do run like horses. And so when zebras gallop, they begin with their hind legs thrusting forward. And as they touch down and push off, then their front legs continue with their stride, reaching forwards, pulling them on, all that sort of thing. And, you know, even just more than a gallop, zebras can sort of like walk from almost right away after birth and like sort of within an hour, and so within 24 hours they can learn to run. And so this is sort of important for getting away from predators, but still, like, I think that, you know, that they're sort of like built up to be, you know, fast animals anyway. And so, you know, yeah, I don't see, like, yeah, there's any real difference between zebras and horses in this regard.
Yeah, there was an interview that I read from Hayden Panettiere, who plays Channing, and she said the main difference that she found in terms of a riding style when you're racing is that a zebra has a really short neck compared to a horse. And so when you're leaning forward like you do when you're riding a horse at a high speed, she said it felt like she was going to tumble over and fall off the zebra, because she actually rode a zebra. It's not CGI. Yeah, it felt like she was going to flip over because there was nothing to hang on to. So that's probably the biggest difference, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely. Wow, that's amazing. And I think that, yeah, Hayden, she didn't really have too much experience riding a horse to begin with as well.
Yeah, that's right. She had only ridden a horse only a couple of times beforehand, and she convinced them that she had. The director was sent video of three young actresses that were sort of vying for the position, and she fell off in her video, but she laughed and got back on and kept going. And the director said that that was the reason that she was picked in the end, because, you know, she just kept going. And he said that, you know, that Hayden was someone that could be taught. So props to Hayden for doing that. Would have been terrifying, you know. Riding a horse, learning to ride a horse is scary enough, but then suddenly being thrown on an actual zebra, like, that's just a whole other level.
Oh, yeah. And we might just finish this up by saying that in terms of getting it right, the movie, in terms of the sport and zebras being able to sustain long periods of racing, they can sort of generally race up to like full speed up to about a mile. And while it's never really specified the length of the Kentucky Open in this film, the Kentucky Derby, I think, is a mile and a half or something like that. And so if they're sort of like basing the Kentucky Open on the Kentucky Derby and Stripes is basically pulling up, you know, sort of on that last stretch of the race, or, you know, maybe like a lap and a half or something like that, you know, like he does pull up.
But the sentimental choice Stripes, he's coming under pressure, starting to come back along the inside.
So, like, I think that they got that right in terms of the, in terms of zebras, sort of like, you know, sustaining a period of, you know, speed, really, in sort of like one burst. And so I think that, you know, that was definitely true, and that was definitely obviously needed for Stripes to continue on and win the race.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, it's pretty cool that, like, such a wild idea for a film has stuck pretty true to every other element.
Just in terms of how well they conveyed the sport, or maybe just like the attitude towards horse racing, and maybe some of the background stuff as well. We had a couple of scenes where we saw horses being trained. And so a couple of these methods were getting them to run on a treadmill, using a sauna suit, and then a couple of testing methods as well, to, I don't know, see levels of something. I don't know. But you know, I think that these methods are used in horse racing. I definitely know that the treadmill is. I don't know about all the testing and, you know, sticking all sorts of stuff on the horses and seeing where they're at. But the only thing that I could see from a sauna suit, I couldn't actually see that, you know, horses use a sauna suit. But the one thing that I could find about a possible one for horses was a suit they might wear in preparation for races, where they wear a fitted suit which zips up at the front and the hind legs. These particular suits are said to reduce muscle soreness, helping horses recover after tough exercise, and also to reduce the effect of vibration while traveling.
Well, that kind of makes sense, because heat stimulates blood flow, which helps with muscle recovery. So I guess it's doing the same thing. If a sauna suit, you know, is building up that temperature and increasing the blood flow, then yeah, I mean, sounds kind of true to me.
All right, and I'll just finish this with a bit of fun facts. While Trenton's pride is a foal, his blaze doesn't reach all the way down to his muzzle. When he is grown up, it is past his muzzle. Horses' markings don't change that dramatically. And so, you know, like we sort of said with, like, you know, Stripes being played, I guess, by a couple of different zebras, I'm guessing they used a couple of different horses to play these characters as well.
Yeah, that's fake. That's fake. I can't believe they've done this to us. They didn't speed up the growth process of a horse. How rude.
And I mean, a zebra's stripes are like fingerprints. No two are alike. And so in the montage of Channing training Stripes, you can clearly see that she is riding different zebras at different times.
Yeah, look, honestly, you're not going to get one zebra that behaves for the whole filming of a movie. So I think we'll let that one slide. I guess, yeah, the main elephant in the room here, not elephant, different circus animal, zebra. The zebra in the room is the fact that zebras just do not horse race. Yes, there are instances of domesticated zebras. One of them features in this movie. It's just not realistic, is it? You know, a guy that grows up on a farm and, you know, harvests corn and has a menagerie of animals, domesticating a zebra, and in such a short period of time as well, it's just not really accurate, is it? I know we're in a movie land and it's Everything's fictional. But yeah, I guess when you've got so many other elements that are accurate in the depiction of the film, you know, you get a bit of a creative license here, and it makes it all that more believable, I guess, because yeah, everything else seems quite valid.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, in many ways, like, zebras appear like very much like horses or like ponies, I mean, given their size, I think, and yet there are some like underlying differences in like their behavior that have meant that, you know, horses and like donkeys, I guess, like have been successfully domesticated, whereas like zebras sort of like are predominantly wild and like might have a tendency to sort of like, you know, bite and like, you know, or react like, you know, differently to you know, an animal like a horse that is able to be trained probably a bit better, or like, you know, a sort of like an animal that is for training sometimes as well, whereas you just don't get that with zebras. And so I think that, yeah, like this movie is a bit like sort of like fantastical in terms of presenting that as an idea, but I think that, yeah, like you said, you definitely can get these types of things in movies sometimes.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, we'll talk about the cast list now, and I'll run you through the main cast list, and both humans and animals, I suppose. And so we had Hayden Panettiere as Channing Walsh. We had Bruce Greenwood as Norman Walsh, M. Emmett Walsh as Sheriff Woodsy. We had Wendy Malick as Clara Dalrymple. We had Gary Bullock as John Cooper. And then in terms of voice actors, we had Frankie Muniz as Stripes, Dustin Hoffman as Tucker, Whoopi Goldberg as Franny, Mandy Moore as Sandy, Steve Harvey and David Spade as Buzz and Scuzz, Jeff Foxworthy as Reggie, Joe Pantoliano as Goose, Snoop Dogg as Lightning.
Snoop Dogg the dog? I thought, yeah, that was
awesome. I think he also says like for a shizzle or something like that as well.
Finally, some peace and quiet. Y'all go ahead. Bye-bye now. I'll just stay here and watch the palace for shizzle. Woof.
Wow. And like, that's a phrase that I associate with him, so. We had Fred Thompson as Sir Trenton, Joshua Jackson as Trenton's Pride, Michael Rosenbaum as Roughshod, and Michael Clark Duncan as Clydesdale. And so looking at that cast, and I think we've referenced it a couple of times in terms of it being diverse and, you know, just a stellar cast in its own right as well. Like, you know, all these people who are providing the voices, and like, you know, we know them from, you know, the live action stuff, I guess. And, you know, we've sort of spoken about, you know, some of these people and their voice and providing their voices to this film. But in terms of, yeah, the cast list, both human and voice alike, Danny, what did you make of the cast? And is there anyone that you want to point out?
Yeah, absolutely fantastic cast, as you said, and quite diverse as well. So, again, being ahead of its time, I really, really, really loved Whoopi Goldberg as Franny. I think she played that role so well. And also, like I said before, Buzz and Scuzz, Steve Harvey and David Spade were highlights of the film for me. Hayden Panettiere, I just want to highlight her. She was 15 when this was filmed. It was one of her very first acting roles. And to go through what she did to get that role was fantastic. I as a kid, actually adored Hayden Panettiere. You know, I wanted to be an actor when I was a kid, and she was who I looked up to. And it's very cool to see her in other films now. Another cool part was when Stripes was young, Stripes is actually voiced by Hayden Panettiere's brother, Jansen. So not sure, like, if Hayden, like, you know, got him into the role or not, but Jansen has had multiple acting and voice acting roles since, so that's pretty cool. And yeah, we touched on Snoop Dogg being Lightning, being a dog. That was awesome. And Dustin Hoffman, obviously an iconic actor in his own right. I think it's I think they did well to choose actors who do have those unique, recognizable voices. We spoke about not recognizing Steve Harvey's earlier, but yeah, so many of these, you know, we recognize, and they were really prominent actors in the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. Like Frankie Muniz, you wouldn't have come across a bigger actor of his age during these years, obviously known for his role in Malcolm in the Middle. So it was cool to see him break that mold as well. And then we saw Wendy Malick, who plays Clara, the main villain, main human villain. She was in Don't Shoot Me, iconic TV show. And then later on, she's in Alvin and the Chipmunks, which, you know, she's got range. yeah, fantastic cast. I loved it. What did you think of it?
Yeah, now, you know, you've said every other of those two movies that Wendy Malick was in. Like, I think that for this whole movie, I was like, where have I seen her before too? And like, and then I was like, maybe it is just like from this movie, really. Like, this is like the lasting or the impact that, you know, she has on me. And, you know, I just know her from this movie. But those two examples that you gave, I'm definitely like, oh yeah, that too. So yeah, anyway, I think that, you know, every single cast member on this movie like did an exceptional job. I think that, like you said, like there was just a distinctness about every single character, whether they were human or whether they were an animal. And so like the voice actors. And so I think that, you know, that really was really, or that was really important for this movie to sort of like, yeah, associate that, you know, there are differences between, you know, the characters that are human and the characters that are animals as well. And you sort of like, you know, you recognize, you know, that different characters or different people are talking and just like, yeah, associate, you know, in your mind, like who each character is. And so I think that, you know, the whole cast list did really well in that regard. I think that Hayden Panettiere, you know, 15 years old, early, you know, one of her earlier movies, I think that she did a really good job. I think that, you know, I think like from watching this and like, you know, understanding that it was one of her first roles, I think that like from this movie, like I could definitely see that, you know, there was a bit of improvement that, you know, she needed to go through as an actor. But I think that, you know, this movie sort of like laid the foundations of how she would grow up to be an actor at the same time. And so like, you know, that's sort of like a bit of like the negativity that I have on her, but I could definitely say that from this movie, like she had the potential to be a greater actor at the same time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you can tell she is pretty fresh faced in this, but yeah, she did a great job. Can I also give a shout out to the actual animals that are part of it? Yeah. We're talking about the cast list here. Like Zebra Stripes was played by numerous zebra, as you highlighted earlier, but the main zebra that played it, his name was Sam Quentin. Incredible name for a zebra. Don't know what it references, if it is a reference or if it's just named after someone, but Sam Quentin was the main zebra in this movie. But yeah, like I said, there was a range of zebra that that participated in this film. The youngest was 10 years old, the oldest was close to 25. And a couple of them were actually specifically captured from the Kalahari Desert just for the filming of this movie. So not sure how I feel about that in terms of morals, but I guess that, you know, that kind of gives a bit of spunk to the movie and, yeah, gives a bit of credibility isn't the word I'm looking for, but yeah, it makes it feel genuine almost in the way that the zebra were reacting. They did have one tame zebra on set, which definitely would have helped save some time. But yeah, he had to be trained up to fit the role. And yeah, Sam Quentin, this zebra, Sam Quentin, what a name. he's actually a famous zebra. If you can believe that. He was in one of the Ace Ventura movies. He's been in some Schweppes commercials, and he was even in a photo shoot with Steffi Graf. So again, like our friend Wendy in this movie, this zebra's got range.
Killing it. Yeah, and like, obviously, as we're talking about the cast, the animals are part of the cast. And I think that, so much of that as well is like, how people can train these animals. And Danny, there was an Australian horse trainer that was responsible for, training, I think, the zebras in this movie.
Yeah, so Heath Harris is a former Jackaroo, one of the world's top horse stuntmen and trainers, was the person in charge of essentially teaching Hayden Panettiere how to ride the zebra, how it would be ridden if a jockey was riding it. Yeah, like I said, Hayden had only ridden a horse, a couple of times beforehand. So that's a challenge in itself. And then swap the horse out for a zebra, and you've got a whole other ball game. So, yeah, he was heavily involved with it. There are a bunch of Australians involved with the filming. I think there was a crew of, just under 200, and about 40 of the crew members were Australian. There were one of the people involved with the handling of the animals actually ended up starting a film animal company afterwards, looking after those sorts of exotic animals, I guess, to be used in film. But yeah, Heath Harris was the star here in terms of getting Hayden ready for filming and also the horses ready. So that's pretty cool. In the end, Heath was so good that he took Hayden from the littlest amount of experience possible to actually doing 95% of the filming on the zebra. Like that's her in the race. Most of the scenes are all her. They just got a stunt person to do like some of the more hectic kind of things. So that's not only a credit to Hayden as an actress, but Heath as a teacher and a mentor. So yeah, it's cool that there's Aussie flavor in this film.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's amazing for me to sort of like see or hear that it was Hayden doing a lot of that. And obviously, a lot of that was down to Heath Harris at the same time. But I just like, yeah, again, like maybe the credit goes to Hayden in terms of, just being able to sort of like rough it with these real horses. I assume maybe real jockeys. I don't actually know. But, just these people who, might ride horses for a living and just like be in the thick of it. And again, like it's sort of like, she's pushed to her limit. She's pushed like against the line of the track sometimes as well. And I think just like being able to stand, on top of the zebra at the same time as everything else that is happening at the speed that you're going, like it is a credit to Hayden in that sense. And, as much as it is Heath Harris training her, it's also her being able to execute this, with his training.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not sure how many of the actors were actually jockeys. Some of them looked a little bit big to be jockeys.
Yeah, that is true. They were big and burly and like really sort of aggressive. And again, like maybe this comes back to like how true the sport is to the movie. But like, I don't know, like, yeah, like how much you get away with like is pushing other horses or like, hitting another horse with your like stick or whatever. And I will say also, like, I did go back and like rewind all like the race scenes. And I don't think at any point like any of the jockeys are actually using the whip like during the race. Like, I think that's the only instance where a whip is used. Like, still bad. But like, in terms of like getting away with that sort of stuff, I wouldn't think that that would be acceptable. But I also don't think it would be acceptable to have some flies bite a horse's bottom and have him tip topple his train his jockey at the same time. So I don't know.
Yeah, look, honestly, I mean, flies are known to bite horses, but not at the speed that those horses are running at. That's ridiculous. I did have a chuckle at after the race. Clara actually calls for the zebra to be disqualified.
You hear me?
Channing, Channing, over here.
That zebra was all over the field.
He's horrible. Have you had any
communication? Listen to me. I want that zebra disqualified.
When, if it was a real race, her horse and her jockey would be the ones disqualified, yeah, because of that whip use and the pushing and going in the line. So yes, that sorry girl, I'm calling you out for that one.
All right, we'll just wrap this one up and we will reference a voice actor as well. And so Dustin Hoffman, this was actually his first time voice acting in a theatrical film. Later, he would go on to voice Shifu, the Red Panda, in Kung Fu Panda, and Roscuro, the Brown Rat, in The Tale of Despero. And so I think that, like we said, we could definitely see Dustin Hoffman in this role, providing the voice of Tucker. And he did so well that he got a couple of other gigs voice acting.
That's pretty cool. It's wild to think that it took so long for someone with such an iconic voice to pick up a voice acting role.
All right, we'll move on now. And we asked the question, was there a relatable character in this movie for you, Danny? And I think that you sort of spoke a bit to this at the top of the episode as well. But, you know, was there anything that you wanted to expand on, or maybe, yeah, another character that you wanted to identify that you sort of related to?
Reggie to an extent, except I'm definitely not a morning person. Yeah. So yes to Reggie, but also no to Reggie. Tough question. Probably more Lightning, the dog. He just sleeps in the sun. You know what? If I had the choice of doing that, that is how I would be. And probably Franny. If we're looking at lead characters, Franny is probably the one that I relate to the most in terms of, you know, being a bit sensible, a bit emotional, and having a couple funny one-liners sometimes that no one really laughs at. And also Scuzz, because I'm a bit annoying and I sing along to everything. And sometimes I have random dance breaks that just everyone's just like, oh, just shut up and stop what you're doing, Danny. And also Scuzz loves food and so do I. So they're probably my top three. What about yourself?
Yeah, I sort of see myself in all of those that you gave as well. You know, definitely Lightning for his sort of like lazy attitude, and like I would definitely be one that, you know, would just prick my ear up a couple of times but ultimately just, you know, go back to sleep or whatever. I think that, you know, sometimes, you know, Reggie, sort of his, like, he means well, he's not that bright, you know, sometimes that might be me. But I think that definitely, like you said, Franny, in terms of, she was like, you know, sometimes more the facilitator of like, you know, encouraging people or like animals on, you know, more so than Tucker was at times. And so I think that in that sense, like, you know, encouraging, you know, the main character to sort of pursue his dream, give him words of advice, and is like aware of like what's happening and like the sentiment around things. I think that, you know, that character definitely was relatable for me.
Yeah, we are pretty similar in real life as well, so it makes sense that we have the same actors that are, or the same characters that are the same.
Yeah. All right, we're coming up to the end of the episode now, and we do ask an important prompt, that is, if you could have a racing movie get made, what would it be and why? So, Danny, have you thought of an idea for this particular prompt?
I think for me, it would have to be something wildly fictional, because like we said at the start, we're not huge on horse racing. So I think anything that sort of shows off in some positive or you know, exciting light isn't good. So I wouldn't do like a normal horse racing movie. But I thought of other zebra who have starred in movies. And the first one that came to mind was Marty from Madagascar. And so I would like to see a crossover where Marty and Stripes race against each other. And then also another spin-off where all of the characters from Madagascar race against each other. We know that Melman would come last because he is just the biggest hypochondriac and like can't even walk properly, let alone run at pace. I think that everyone would be all over Alex, the lion, because he looks the best. I think Gloria, the hippo, would be like the dark horse. I reckon she could come in like podium finish.
Yeah.
King Julian would be pushing against Alex, just trying, they would be fighting to try and beat each other. And what's the little guy called? The little one with the big eyes?
Yeah.
I'm steak. That little one would just like get under everyone's feet and cause some sort of crash. Yeah, I think King Julian's offhander, Maurice, would actually probably come top two. He's unsuspecting. He's the mastermind behind everything. He's very talented. I think that he would be the one to look out for. He would be the quote unquote dark horse. And then the penguins would probably just, the penguins are the fly equivalent. Like they're the Buzz and Scuzz equivalent in this film. But yes, we want Madagascar racing stripes. I don't know what title you'd give that, but it'd be a fun time, I think. So I'm just going to put a little copyright at the end here saying that I'm going to create this movie when I have, you know, $20 billion to hire DreamWorks animation staff to do this. I'm copywriting this. What's your idea, Jason?
Yeah, well, I think it's important to copyright it because I think it was sort of established a couple of times on this podcast. Like, we get some good ideas, and like, we definitely think that we should be the ones to create these and hope that no like filmmakers are listening at all and, stealing our ideas. And if you are, like, you know, we've copyrighted them. So I think that's important that you did say that you have copyrighted this idea so no one can steal it from you.
Exactly.
Mine, I know, like you said just before, like, you know, we don't want to celebrate horse racing and like the achievements or whatever, but I think that, you know, from this movie and like from learning that like Hayden Panettiere was 15 or 16 or around that age and, you know, winning this race, like it did actually get me thinking about like the youngest jockey to win a race. And so that is a guy named Peter St. Albans, born Michael Bowden, but he's the youngest jockey to actually win the Melbourne Cup. He won in 1876, riding a horse named Brissus, at the recorded age of 13, but that was because that was the minimum age, whereas he was actually 8 days short of his 12th birthday.
What?
Yeah.
That is wild. I mean, makes sense because he'd be really light. But yeah, to have the skills to win, like how many horses would have been in the Melbourne Cup in 1876? But that's a really cool stat.
Yeah. Apparently there were 33 horses in this particular race.
What? And this week we couldn't even get, 25 horses in the race?
Yeah.
I like that. I don't endorse horse racing, but I like that idea.
Yeah, I like the idea.
Who would you get to play the jockey?
Well, yeah, so I don't know what he looks like, so I can't do like a picture like for like or anything like that. I'm just trying to think of like, child actors who would be around. I mean, the actor would probably be like 16 playing an 11-year-old, you know, such as Hollywood at the moment. With that in mind, I think that, you know, this particular actor was most recently in Luca, and that is Jacob Tremblay. He's 16 years old. He looks about 12, 13-ish, and so sort of in line with, the age of that jockey, and so that's who I'd pick.
Nice. Good choice, I reckon. Let's copyright this one as well.
Okay, let's do that. I'm surprised that it hasn't been done yet.
Yeah, have your people call his people and you'll sort something out.
Yeah. Now, when we create the Edge of the Crowd, production studio, that's where all of these ideas will come to fruition.
Done deal.
All right, we've come to the end of this episode now. So, Danny, would you like to share your social media handles and anywhere else our listeners can find you?
Absolutely. So I'm terminally online. I'm always on Twitter. You can find me at It's Danny Brown. Danny has one N and there is no E on Brown. Man, I hate spelling out my name every time. And I am a sports photographer and you can find all my stuff on Instagram. It's dcb.photo. So that's me. Where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all at the handle @JaceIrves. You've been listening to Goals on Film. You can find Goals on Film on Twitter and Instagram at Goals on Film Pod. Goals on Film is part of the Edge of the Crowd network. You can find Edge of the Crowd on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, and TikTok at Edge of the Crowd. You can also view any of our stories, be it sport, culture, or politics, on our website, www.edgeofthecrowd.com. Until next week, thanks for listening.
Thanks for having me.